have nothing at all to say about the current president turning Easter into a transgender day or the former president selling patriotic Bibles. April Fools on this week's Corey Truax Show. Friends, I have been victimized many times today by the April Fools thing. I knew it was that day, and I know how social media works, but I would sign on to social media for a second and see a headline. Actually, twice it was about the Dallas Cowboys, and I was like, wait, what? And then you click it, and it's an April Fools story, and it took me a minute. So I feel like I was a victim. That's the thing you most want to be in America, as a victim, and I feel like a victim of the April Fool's jokes today. I hope that one didn't get you too bad, because that is primarily what I want to talk about today, are those two things, the current president declaring this transgender day of visibility and the former president hawking some Bibles that has the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and their bindings. But I have a couple other quick things I want to do as well. Welcome to the Corey Truax Show, wherever you find podcasts. I am glad you're here. You can find more from me at CoreyTruax.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Threads. Just look for my weird name, Corey Truax, and you can respond to the show at any of those social media accounts. You can also email me at CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com, CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. And then finally, I get to serve the awesome people of Beechwood Church. Huge fan of those folks. I get to serve them at various times in various ways, but I guess primarily Sunday mornings at 10:30, you're invited, where I get to often lead worship, do some preaching. Speaking of, preached Easter. That sermon is out on the podcast feed. Thank you, Brandon, who listened and sent me a text with some encouragement. I'm meaning to respond to that. My bad for not doing that yet. And for other feedback is always appreciated. So, all right, there is the all the stuff I have to do. I want to tell you about this that happened to me on Easter. Was on my way to church. I stopped at QT, Quick Trip. Don't know about the ethics of that on Easter morning, on the Sabbath, but stick with me. Don't get distracted by it. I just had a moment that I thought was cool. I was in full suit and tie, which I've started to do for church anyway now, but Easter is that one day that churches that are more casual, including, I would put our church in that more casual, the business casual ethos. I was full suit and tie, and I was checking out, and this lady across from me, because you know how QT works, there can be two people on either side of a register, and she's on the other side, and I just hear her say, that suit is fantastic, you look great in that, and I look up, and it's, I put her in her early 50s, late 40s, she was a black lady, and she was also just dressed to the nines, and it was obvious she was doing Easter service, and I was doing an Easter service, and I just said, thank you very much, you look great as well. And I just shot, I took my Christian shot and said, you know, he is risen. And she said, he is risen indeed. I said, you guys have a great Easter service. And she said it back to me. And I just loved it. I loved that experience because it felt like I felt like I could have been living in Mayberry. Feels like it could have been an Andy Griffith thing where two random folks who probably don't have a ton in common, we had the most important thing in common. And I don't know her theology or where she was about to go to church, but I know that we had Jesus in common, and it was a cool thing. And I came away with two takeaways. One, don't get mad at me for this first one. How we dress signals something. I'm not saying it's uber important. I'm not criticizing you if you are part of the athleisure world, as I often am, where we go around in the world mostly looking like we are the oddest people. We wear a lot of gym clothes, but we are not a lot of people who work out. There's a lot of, that's what I notice out in the world. A lot of people wearing workout attire, and my impression is they probably don't work out. That, what I was wearing, what she was wearing, it signaled something. We both knew of the other one, you're going to do something important. In the context of the calendar, said to us, we're both in the same club here. We're following the same Jesus. We're going to go worship that same one. I have started wearing suit and tie to church. I've always wanted to. That's always my preference. But I have some sensitivity to my context. And my context isn't one where people dress up all the time. And so only recently, our lead pastor started putting on the suit and tie. And like, if anyone else is going to do it, if it's not going to be weird, like if I'm not going to be the only one, I'm in. I'm in for the up. Let's dress up. Let's go look like we're doing something big. It ends up signaling something. I have I have found that in 15 years of professional life. I used to be in settings a lot where there would be 50 or 60 professionals in a room, college representatives, and I found myself in often leadership or influential places in the social dynamic. I guess partly because I'm gregarious and have a big personality, but it was commented on all the time that it's because I walked in the room usually dressed the best, and not because I spent a bunch of money on what I wore. It was just putting myself together and choosing to have that goal. I'm going to be the most put together. It's going to signal something. I found that to be the case in my old career in sales. I mean, it was college admissions, but that's ultimately sales. There's some kind of confidence, a good piece of business for you young folks that listen and parents that have kids that might want to get into sales. The job of sales is, at least in the top two or three, is create confidence in the customer. You can call that creating trust, but the customer needs to believe, I can trust you. You have competence about you. And putting yourself together, being well put together, it says something. And you know that's true. Because you've come across the salesperson or the waiter or the waitress that was just disheveled and you had an impression. I think there's actually been, I remember this. This is probably 15 years ago. But there was a very well-controlled study in a restaurant where the control was that the people doing the experiment made sure that within 10 seconds of all these timing of people getting their drinks or getting a refill or fill or their food coming, all the things that you would judge as good service, and tried to even keep the conversations generally the same between the server and the customer, when later being polled and filling out surveys, the people who had the waiter that was really well put together just got higher ratings. And the one that was of similar attraction level, but just kind of disheveled and kind of out of order, got lower ratings. All I'm trying to tell you here is how you put yourself together matters. It signals something. And I think that should maybe inform a little of how we dress to church. I think some people from our church listen. Don't hear me challenging you on that. I'm not challenging you in particular. I'm just genuinely saying how we walk out into the world, how we're dressed in the world, says something. It was I like the example. It was a big deal back in the day to fly. And so when you got on an airplane, you dressed up. And I've noticed it. I don't really do it, but I've noticed it badly. I mean, people get on airplanes now basically in pajamas. And I don't get it. I don't know why that's where we are as a culture. But anyway, I went way longer on that than I wanted to. Oh yeah, the last thing I wanted to say on that. For the outsider, like the person working that register, the people in line, what a good testimony. That two people that have differences, and one of our main differences in the United States is ethnicity, were just so cordial and happy and immediately unified. And the only thing that unified us was we knew where we were going. Church is coming. Jesus worship is happening. So there's some good testimony to that as well. I wanted to go 4 minutes on that, and I went 9. Let's go to the other big thing I wanted to do today. The internet in Christianity and in right-wingism, and those are distinct things, those are not the same, has been a buzz for the last 48 hours as I am recording to you on April the 1st, the day after Easter, with the White House issuing a proclamation on Easter Sunday recognizing a day called Transgender Visibility Day, a day to bring attention to people who are sick in their mind and confused, ranging from sick in the mind and confused to maybe something darker happening with them as well. I want to give you the facts on that first, and then I'll talk about the other thing that should be getting attention to. The Biden administration, the White House, God knows if he knew or if he was involved. It's hard to tell with that particular administration because it's often being run by underlings. They issue the proclamation, and Christians get mad and say, no, it's not. It's not Transgender Day. It's not Transgender Visibility Day. It's literally the highest holy day in all of Christianity. It is Resurrection Sunday. It is Easter Sunday. We celebrate Jesus and his resurrection today. No, it's not Transgender Visibility Day. And then left-wing secularist response was, no, March 31st has always been that day. By always, it means 2009. This fake holiday has been around for less than 15 years. Wait, that's about 15 years? Yeah, about 15 years. And so their argument back is, no, it's not a response to Easter, not trying to replace Easter, but recognizing a day that has always been on this particular day. It just so happens that this year, Easter corresponds to that day. And then I respond to that, just trying to give you the facts. I respond to that with, well, yeah, and that's why you just don't make a proclamation. Easter's been getting celebrated for 2,000 plus years in billions of people across the planet. That's the superseding holiday. And if you're going to issue any kind of proclamation, if you want to make any kind of statement, you make it about Easter. You don't make the statement about the made-up holiday that's been around for 15 years and it affects a tiny little, like less than 1% of people. And again, is ultimately a matter of sin and mental sickness that needs to be addressed. So that's the facts of what happened with the current president and his Transgender Visibility Day and a lot of outrage. Second thing. Thursday or Friday night before Easter, the former president, just like the current president, a pagan man, a wicked man, unstable in all his ways, and we can recount all of his horrific character flaws, and his unrepentant character flaws, puts out a video holding a binded Bible that seems to be branded in some ways with the American flag on it a little bit. And he says it's the best book, it's the most important book. It is. And also in this Bible, that was, I guess, Lee Greenwood, the guy who wrote Proud to Be an American, he commissioned it, and they have in that Bible as well the text of the Constitution, the text of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and the text of the Declaration of Independence. So Constitution, Declaration are in there. I think there might be some other early American documents in there as well. And he's selling it for the low, low price of, wait, was it $59.99 or $69.99? I think it was $59.99. So we got the former president hawking the Bible, while also in that same video expressing how someone had said to him, isn't it ironic, you know, that it's on this week with all the things you're going through, President Trump, and with your prosecutions, that this is what they did to Jesus. He compared himself to Jesus going through what Jesus did with his false trial. So those are the facts. Aren't we in a good situation, everybody? Former president trying to sell a patriotic Bible. Current president on Easter declaring Transgender Visibility Day. It's a good time. My reaction now. So those are, I think that was all the facts I could give with as little commentary. Now here's the commentary. To Trump, I saw various responses. Some embraced it. Have no problem. I largely ignored it. Some folks just laughed at it because it's kind of absurd, and what else are you going to do at an absurd thing but laugh? There was some condemnation. That condemnation came in a few ways. I think one that might be the most important is the Bible being all we need for life and godliness, deserving, demanding a distinct place in our hearts, minds, and in culture. So that it never gets binded with other documents as if those other documents might be of equal value. Listen, I love the Constitution of the United States. I think it's the greatest governing document in the history of humanity. I can be argued with, but I don't know if there is a better one. I can't think of one. The Declaration of Independence is an incredibly important part of the Western canon of literature. Not the canon of scripture, but the canon of literature. Laying out the argument for the modern era that we have. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator, a God with certain unalienable rights. For the first time saying, in a formal document, no king granted us rights. God granted us rights. The government didn't grant us rights. God gave us rights. Our rights are inherent to our humanity. It's a very important piece of literature. The Bill of Rights is unbelievably important. Laying out the Charter of Negative Liberties, the things the government can't do to you and can't take from you. And even when you're caught up with a criminal situation, with how the government has to treat you in prosecuting that or investigating and prosecuting and sentencing those crimes. These are very important. They're not scripture and don't belong to be binded with scripture. Moreover, some of the good criticism of that was, why on earth any Christian wants a Bible endorsed by a pagan, or wants a Bible with anyone's particular name on it, a Trump name on it, or a Lee Greenwood name on it? I know this is anathema to some people. I find it weird that John MacArthur has his name on that Bible. I think like R.C. Sproul basically does his own type of same thing that John MacArthur did. And R.C. Sproul didn't call it the R.C. Sproul Bible. At least I don't think he did. Like, that was the way to do it. If you want to do some editing and put some notes in the Bible, great, awesome. We benefit from that. But, man, it's one thing for John MacArthur to do it, which I don't think was wise. But then for the Christian to desire the John MacArthur Bible is one thing. To then desire the Trump Bible, to desire the Lee Greenwood Bible, the America Bible, oh, we got a problem. This isn't good at all. So that was some of the reaction to Trump and my reaction. To Biden, I mean, I don't get outraged. I think it's an unhealthy emotion. And I was surprised by the intensity of the vitriol to the president on this. But I will say, who tends to downplay the severity of any given thing, this is particularly bad. In a country that is by no means majority Christian, but its vestiges are, its old symbols are Christian in nature, for the head of the federal government in that office to supersede the highest, holiest holiday by issuing a proclamation on one of the anti-Christianities. LGBTism as a movement is an anti-Christianity. It's another religion. It's cultic. Transgenderism is cultic. It has its own religious tenets. And so to almost push a different calendar, you know, I talk often about the Christian calendar and religious calendars. To push a different one, it was particularly bad. I think it's also just politically stupid. It can't be helpful. Like, even the president today is claiming they didn't do it, but I mean, they did do it, and it's bad. It is particularly bad. Now, another take. So we're calling them both bad. Here's a couple takes I have on this. What I find is blue team, red team have different ways of having you or the random person relate to Christianity. And these events over Resurrection Weekend illustrate them. For blue team, blue team addresses Christianity and treats Christianity with scorn and mockery, and they hate Christianity, and they want it destroyed. They want people to despise Christianity. I don't know how else to interpret trying to celebrate a 14 or 15-year-old pagan holiday on the day of Christianity's highest holiday, and just not thinking anything about it, just like, yeah, of course, well, it's one of the made-up transgender days. We're going to celebrate that. And no one in the office even asked, hey, are there any other holidays that day we should maybe think about? Like, Good Friday happens. That's, a federal holiday still. A lot of places are still closed on the Monday after Easter. Like, it is by nature antagonistic. Blue team is antagonistic towards Christianity and wants the culture to be antagonistic. Red team does something else, though. Red team tries to co-opt Christianity. It will say its symbols and its vestiges are good, they're useful. Whether they're true or not ends up being immaterial, but they're useful. And I think that makes you passive towards Christianity. One tries to make you antagonistic, tries to make the culture antagonistic. The other just tries to make you passive. Not that we would encounter the real Jesus. Not that we would get very serious about the business of the kingdom, very serious about what Jesus demands of us all, but would have us pursue this Christianity that's, you know, it's right there with Americanism. You can just say your Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and then hold your Bible right there. We put the two on the same plane and pedestal. There's a passivity towards real, concrete, practical Christianity. Yeah, one is probably worse than the other. Antagonism is worse than co-opting and turning us into passive observers of Christianity. Man, I would love some skepticism and and condemnation of both. My predilection is to be harder on people who claim Christianity. It is, because there's on the like Trump Bible thing. Like, we should know better. A Christian should see an obviously pagan man hawking Bibles with the Constitution in it and be appalled by it. We should. And so I have a little like more fire in me about that, because the people should know. When I see secular progressive leftism do secular progressive leftist things, I'm less appalled because I'm not surprised at the reaction. Like, I go, yeah, well, pagans are going to pagan. That's not a reason not to say, hey, this is bad. That's a bad thing to do. It's not good to celebrate this fake day that is an affront to the first chapter in the Bible. In the beginning, God created. Wait, I'm not. That's Genesis 1:1. I meant to go with Genesis 2. God created them, male and female. He created them. Yeah, that's bad. I have noticed the intensity tends to go further the other direction for most Christians, and that happens to not be me, but I'm going to call them both bad, and I think leave it there. That tells you nothing about November. I'm going to leave everybody alone. It's a hard thing. So if you have comments about that, if you think I'm not taking that those two things happening in concurrence with the intensity that needs to be had, or I'm missing something, I'm more than willing to hear that critique. I may not agree with the critique, but you can offer it. It's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads. Look for me, Corey Truax. And I know I'm old, but my preference is email. CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. I think of someone recently learned this of me in my personal life. When you email me, I'm quick to get back. When you text me, it might be a couple days, because I'm just I'm an email guy. Email feels like a thing I'm supposed to do, like it's a to-do list. So CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com is a good way, and all Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads. I have some more I want to do on this here in a second. This is a show where we do try to be serious about these Bible things. That we're not a political talk show. I hope what we just did there about the former president, the current president, didn't sound like Fox News. It didn't sound like typical right-wing media. I hope it sounded different and has a different level of critique, a different level of thinking. It's one of the themes of the show is we want to be serious about biblical things. One of the ways we've done that the last couple years is try to learn more about God's law in the Old Testament and how that might inform us with wisdom on how to implement laws and live our lives in the modern day. And that can get hard. It's hard to sometimes apply biblical thinking to the modern world when you read in the old law that someone has to pay recompense when their ox gores somebody. You wonder about how that is going to play out in your modern day life. I suspect you have not been gored by an ox, and no one you love has, but the modern day equivalent might have happened to you or someone in your family. And I think that modern day analog would be getting in a car accident or getting hurt at work. Either of those things, they have serious consequences. You're losing money while you're trying to heal up, and the medical bills are piling up. You're just trying to navigate the process to get justice and make it all right. I know it's intimidating, and I don't want you to be scared. I know there are people out there who can help you. The one I want to point you towards is a personal friend of mine. His name is Samuel Harms, H-A-R-M-S, as in stay out of harm's way. You can Google him, or you can also call at 864-666-6666. His name is Samuel Harms, attorney at law. For real, don't try to do these things alone. Get somebody who can help and answer some questions. Reach out to him, Samuel Harms, here in Greenville at 33 Marker Point Drive, Greenville, South Carolina, 29607. The number is 666-666. So if you have been gored by the modern-day ox, that is hurt in a car accident or hurt at work, give Samuel Harms a call. Don't try to navigate it alone. The number is 666-6666. I think just really one more thing that I want to do on the show today, and it comes from a clip from Richard Dawkins. If you don't remember Richard Dawkins, he wrote The God Delusion. He was, without question, the voice of the new atheism throughout my youth. He came to popularity in the late 90s in Britain, and then him and Chris Harris, then another guy who, that's Sam Harris, and then the Chris guy who died of esophageal cancer, forgot his name, they were the big ones. And they were the ones that I thought, when I was coming up at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, I was an apologetics guy. Like, I knew all the arguments to prove the existence of God and how you can trust your Bible, and I thought, man, I bet my life will be about that. I bet I'll be arguing with atheism as its ascendant. And boy, was I wrong. That's the world I grew up in 2002, I thought was going to be a more atheistic world. The world I ended up in is in a very, very believing world. This world believes a lot of stuff. It just believes a lot of pagan stuff. And atheism has fallen by the wayside. Atheism didn't grow. It's people just saying, I believe in nothing. And you can even ask them, do you believe in atheism? No, that doesn't seem right. But I don't believe in anything else either. But Richard Dawkins, that pioneer of atheism in the modern setting, is a good example now of a phenomenon I've shared with you before, and I want you to hear him say it. There is something I'll play the audio in a second. I'm finding that as the Western world is feeling the stress, and if you want to get dramatic, you can say feeling the coming crumbling of Westernism, as the stress points are becoming more acute and more obvious, even people outside the faith are saying, oh, we really needed Christianity, didn't we? I've given you several of those over the last few years. That the woman, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, I think her name was, a Muslim woman who became an atheist who now says she's a Christian. But when you hear her talk about it, she does not sound Christian at all. She basically just says secularism, wokeism, and Islam hurt everybody, and Christianity is the weapon that will fight it. And so that's not doctrinal fealty to Christianity. That's just saying it's the cultural movement to counteract the things that I think are harmful to culture. You hear that. I mean, if you heard it recently, Joe Rogan, who is not a Christian, said something like that to Aaron Rodgers on an interview. Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Jets. That he ended up joking and saying, you know, we need Jesus. But he had a whole minute there leading up where he just says, we needed those transcendent things. We needed standards shared about how we're supposed to live and what our priorities are. And so there are people figuring out, now that the world is crumbling, oh, I guess we needed Christianity. It was the force that made us cohesive so we didn't fall apart as a people. So it is in that vein that I share with you now the most famous atheist of my lifetime speaking on a show in Britain. It's not like their version of NPR, but something close to it. Here is Richard Dawkins. You will hear a woman's voice as well. She's just the interviewer, and I do not know her name. Here we go.
Well, I must say I was slightly horrified to hear that Ramadan is being promoted instead. I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not.
Wait, what? Listen, if you would have played that for 2004, Corey, I'd have been freaking out. What do you mean? Richard Dawkins is saying he's a cultural Christian. This guy despises Christians, despises the Bible, did my whole life. And now he's in his 70s, and he's looking around at his country, Britain, as it falls apart from its wokeism, and then it's also growing Islam. And he's looking around going, I don't know. You know, we were a Christian culture, and I even think of myself as a cultural Christian.
Not a believer, but there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that
I've been talking about this for such a long time. I love hymns and Christmas carols, he says. As opposed to what? Well, as Christianity left the scene, the music we started making was largely bad. There's a lot of good music out there, don't get me wrong. But popular music is vapid and empty. It varies all the way from vapid and empty to raunchy and gross. And those are the two ends of the spectrum. When Christianity abated, things got uglier. And I think even guys like Dawkins, they're seeing that.
We are a Christian country in that sense. It's true that statistically the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down. And I'm happy with that. But I would not be happy if, for example, we lost all our cathedrals and our beautiful parish churches.
I listened to this a little while ago. I forgot this. I can't believe you said some of this. I am glad people are not believing in Christianity, but I sure don't want to lose Christianity. So he wants the form without the substance. He wants Christianity, but he does not want Christ. Because the substance was great. It made better music. He says there, I don't want to lose our cathedrals and our parish churches. Why? If you haven't gone and seen the ones in Europe, just start Googling it. They are magnificent. the cathedrals and the churches in Europe. And I'm talking about middle of nowhere Europe. I'm not talking about just London and Paris and Brussels. Just random little churches I saw in Munich, Germany, in the countryside, were phenomenal works of architecture, because when Christianity was very present, things were beautiful. We wanted to make them last for a long time. But here we have an atheist saying it's good that people don't believe as much. But man, when they stop believing, we're going to lose Christianity, and Christianity provided so many good things. On the one hand, you can be encouraged by that. On the other hand, we do need to be careful. I think this goes with my first point about how blue team in our country wants to make you hostile to Christianity, but red team wants to make you passive to Christianity. Both are going to be hellbound. Both will lead the soul astray. One might keep your country together longer, but this Dawkins, if he just wants Christianity's forms but not its Christ, it will condemn his soul to hell. And if we accept, then, allies that come in and say, hey, guys, we really want Christianity's forms, but we are not winning people to Christ, we are setting ourselves up for a longer-term failure. We will fail in a, I guess, longer term, but it still will be failure if we're pointed in that wrong direction.
So I count myself a cultural Christian. I think it would matter if we, certainly if we substituted any alternative religion, that would be truly dreadful.
Well, which brings me to my supplementary point, which is that...
Before we get to her, if we switched out Christianity for something else, it would be detrimental. Yeah, I know, we did. It's called wokeism, all over the Western world. Wokeism, as defined by the way, if you need a definition, this is my always shorthand definition of wokeism. Wokeism is it's intersectionality and the critical theories. Intersectionality being that no person is a person. Every person is their categories. You are not you. You are your gender. You are your sex. You are your sexuality. You are your income group. But you are definitely not you. You are only your groups, and your group is in relation to someone else. And that relationship is power versus lack of power, oppressor versus oppressed. That is wokeism. That's the way to see the world. And then that leads to all the critical theories. So the gender critical theory, racial critical theory, all of the critical theories come out of intersectionality. So that's wokeism, and it has replaced Christianity. As Christianity has abated, it's made everything worse and ugly, and even the atheist can see it.
Yeah, as we know, church attendance is plummeting, but the erection of mosques across Europe, I think 6,000 are under construction, and there are many more, I mean, are being planned. So do you regard that as a problem? Do you think that matters?
That's an incredible stat. It makes me wonder what the world is going to look like 100 years from now when I'm gone. Because Islam is growing. You know, I talk a lot about how Christianity is growing like crazy. And it is in Africa and Latin America. But do you know what else is growing like crazy? Islam is. The way Christianity is going to grow, we talk about often, is we have more kids than the secularists, and then we don't lose our kids. We don't hand our kids over to any kind of secular system. And if we are the ones having kids, then it just takes a few generations for that majority, that plurality, to start being the decision makers all over the economy and the culture and the governments and all that. But man, I tell you, Islam having even more kids in some of those same places. I think the most interesting country in the world for the next 50 years is going to be Nigeria. Because it is it's the most populous country in Africa. I think it's the fifth or sixth most populous country in the world. There is a great deal of Christian growth there, but there's also a lot of Islamic growth. It's going to be very interesting to see how that's going to work in that country. I'm not asking for any wars. I don't want religious wars. That's how it's happened in the past. But it is an interesting thing to theorize. And so anyway, back to Dawkins. He says Christianity being replaced would be bad, and he lives on a continent where there's 6,000 mosques underway and a lot of Muslim growth all over Europe.
Yes, I do, really. I mean, I choose my words carefully. I mean, if I had to choose between Christianity and Islam, I choose Christianity every single time.
Now, his reasons for that you'll hear may not be the best ones, but I'll play it for you in a minute. This reminds me, you know, this guy, Dawkins, Richard Dawkins, he has rejected wokeism because they came after him so hard when he would just tweet, there really is just men and women. He's a biologist by trade and by training. Every mammalian species of the mammals, it's male and female. That's how we reproduce. We should not give in to any kind of madness around there being a third or fourth or fifth option. There's just men and women. So even here he is now saying, I want to choose my words carefully. In part, he's probably got some slight PTSD over having said hard but true things in the past.
I mean, it seems to me to be a fundamentally decent religion in a way that I think Islam is not.
I think you're going to have to explain why you say that, Professor Dawkins. Why is Islam fundamentally not decent like Christianity?
Yes, I mean, the way women are treated. I mean, Christianity is not great about that. It's had its problems with female vicars and female bishops and things. But there's an active hostility to women, which is promoted, I think, by the holy books of Islam. I'm not talking about individual Muslims, who, of course, are quite different. But the doctrines of Islam, the hadith and the...
All right, that's enough. So you get his reasoning is not super sound, but you're starting to see it more and more. The secularists get it. Christianity was that cohesive foundation on which all the good stuff came. I'll give you a couple other names that I think are interesting. Dr. Abigail Schreier is someone to follow. She tweeted on Easter, I'm not a Christian, but I'm so grateful for Christianity and the world that it's built. She has written the definitive book against childhood transgenderism. She was in that field, and she's a good voice, strong voice, against this horrific thing we are doing to confused and sick children that's making it worse. Not a Christian, she says, but man, she really hopes Christianity wins out. I would say this of Simon Sinek. I have a good friend who I think once called him, Simon Sinek, a pre-Christian. Like, Simon Sinek's going to be a Christian before it's all over. He wrote an incredible book called Find Your Why. And Simon Sinek doesn't know that he's giving biblical, like, ancient wisdom, but he is. And Simon Sinek is, got the third or fourth most watched TED Talk of all time. It has this big presence because he grew up in a Christianized world. He inculcated, that's probably the best, or innervated in himself, Christian things he didn't even know he was learning. But when the world forgot about those Christian things, he just wrote a book about very Christian stuff that he didn't label Christian, and the world was like, yeah, that's the way. But he sounds very Christian. The guy that I'm reading right now, Jonathan Haidt, who is doing great work about getting your kids' smartphones out of their hands because they're breaking their brains. The guy's not a believer, but he seems to think we really do need Judeo-Christianism if we're going to do okay. Just a couple more thoughts on this, we'll be done. I wish I could say to Richard Dawkins, though, you know you're in part responsible for this. You wanted Christianity without Christ and were one of the main voices that led to a great deal of deconstruction and people leaving the church. You fought like crazy against Christianity, and now you're terrified of the new church. You're terrified of the wokists because they want to cancel you. You're terrified of Islam because they're overly violent and oppressive in your mind, and they are. And now you're looking back on Christianity kind of with some desire. I wish they would take some responsibility for their own part in this. And here's my final thing for today. What I'm finding in the part of the Christian world that is online a lot, that has access to a pulpit from time to time, and they seem like they really want to be the ones to do cultural engagement. They want to be a little bit more culture warrior than I like to be. I find in them they often have one setting, and that one setting is belligerence, it's antagonistic, it's combative. And I'm not saying that's not sometimes needed. I this is something I don't like. But I am willing to say something I don't like is still good. I don't like belligerence. I don't like needless combativeness. I'm not a fan of operating that way. But yes, Christians do have some enemies in this world that need to be treated with belligerence. There's some enemies in this world that never means, not never. It doesn't mean physical, by the way. I'm talking, everything here is rhetoric. And I get exhausted by these people's rhetoric because it is so aggressive and so belligerent. I would just like to say that not every battle culturally needs to be fought with a bazooka. I think of folks like Jonathan Haidt and Abigail Schreier and Simon Sinek, and maybe not Richard Dawkins, but some people like him, and recognize there's something happening there. There's an openness to conversation. I don't have to go in guns blazing at everybody. Sometimes verbal guns gotta blaze. But can I encourage you that not every one of them has to be? And the people that you follow that seem to always have their guns blazing might not be a good influence. There's all kinds of unbelievers out there. And our tactics for each one should be thoughtful before we engage. All right, I did a lot on the show today. And I will take any comments or feedback you have. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads. Look for me, Corey Truax. Again, CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com is the fastest way to actually get me to respond to something. I'm grateful that you listen. And if the Lord allows, I'll be back with another new edition of the Corey Truax Show next week. Until then, everybody, peace and love.